welcome back to the Crypto Daily. Today we're joined by a special guest, Nick Blockscale, founder of Derive, a leading DeFi options protocol. Nick, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Sarah.
So Nick, your recent report suggests Ethereum traders are less optimistic about ETH's price potential compared to Bitcoin. What's driving this sentiment?
We're seeing a significant skew in ETH options, Sarah. There are nearly 2.5 times more calls sold than bought, indicating traders are capping their upside expectations around $2.6. This contrasts sharply with Bitcoin, where open interest is piling up at the $75 and 100K strikes, suggesting traders anticipate a major breakout.
Interesting. We're also seeing record inflows into Bitcoin ETFs, hitting $556 million recently, the highest since June. Yet Ethereum ETFs aren't seeing the same enthusiasm. Is this divergence just about price expectation, or are there other factors at play? Speaking of big bets, Blockstream just raised a whopping $210 million in debt financing. They're putting it all towards Bitcoin infrastructure, specifically their Layer 2 scaling solutions. What do you make of this move, Nick? Is Blockstream onto something here, or is this just another case of Bitcoin maximalism?
It's a bold move, Sarah, especially considering the debt aspect. But I wouldn't dismiss it as pure maximalism. Blockstream has always been deeply entrenched in the Bitcoin ecosystem, and they've got skin in the game. Remember, they launched Liquid Network back in 2018, and it's already seen over $1.8 billion in assets issued. They're not just talking the talk, they're walking the walk.
That's true. And their mining node offerings, BMN1 and BMN2, have also garnered attention from institutional investors. It seems like they're building a whole ecosystem around Bitcoin, not just focusing on price speculation.
Exactly. And this latest funding round aligns with the growing interest in Bitcoin's Layer 2 solutions. The Ordinals protocol really opened the floodgates, and now everyone's looking for ways to make Bitcoin more scalable and versatile. We're seeing it with Lightning Network, Stax. All these platforms are vying to be the go-to solution for Bitcoin's limitations.
It's interesting how the narrative around Bitcoin's utility has shifted. For years, it was all about Ethereum and smart contracts, but now Bitcoin is stepping up its game. Even BlackRock's Larry Fink sees Bitcoin as a legitimate asset class, comparing its growth trajectory to the early days of the mortgage market.
Fink's comments are significant, especially coming from the CEO of the world's largest asset manager. He's echoing what many in the crypto space have been saying for years. Bitcoin is a macro asset, uncorrelated with traditional markets. And he's not alone. We're seeing more institutional investors dip their toes into Bitcoin, driven by concerns about inflation and geopolitical uncertainty.
And of course, we can't forget the upcoming US election. The crypto community seems particularly interested in how the candidates view digital assets. We've seen articles about Trump's potential crypto strategy, Harris's focus on financial inclusion through blockchain, even Curtis Boshaw, the Senate candidate from New Jersey, accepting Bitcoin donations.
It's fascinating to see how crypto is becoming a campaign issue, Sarah. And it's not just about regulation anymore. Candidates are realizing that blockchain technology can address issues like financial literacy, access to capital, even voting security. This election could be a turning point for crypto's role in U.S. policy.
Speaking of institutional interest, we've seen some intriguing movements in the altcoin market. Several articles highlight a shift away from meme coins like Dogecoin, even with Grayscale considering it for a future investment product. What's your take on this, Nick?
It's the age-old debate, Sarah. Hype versus utility. Meme coins like Dogecoin thrive on social sentiment, often driven by celebrity endorsements or viral trends. They can generate massive short-term gains, but their long-term viability is questionable, especially as the market matures. Institutional investors are looking for projects with solid fundamentals, real-world use cases, and a clear path to adoption. That's where projects like Rexus Finance come in.
Right. Rexus Finance is mentioned quite a bit in these articles. They're focused on real-world asset tokenization, which seems to be a hot topic these days. One article even claims they could outperform Dogecoin's 2021 success. Is that realistic?
It's ambitious, but not entirely far-fetched. Tokenizing real-world assets like real estate, commodities, or art unlocks significant liquidity and opens up investment opportunities to a wider audience. It's a trillion-dollar market with huge potential for disruption. Rexys Finance seems to understand this, and their platform offers a suite of tools for token creation, trading, and management. Plus, their pre-sale performance and that million-dollar giveaway indicate strong community support.
And let's not forget the other players in this space. We have Solana, with its impressive transaction speed and partnerships with the likes of Shopify and MasterCard. Then there's Sui, with its object-based architecture and scalability solutions, attracting significant investment from major VC firms. It seems like the race for blockchain dominance is heating up.
Absolutely, Sarah. We're witnessing a Cambrian explosion of innovation in the blockchain space. Each platform brings its own strengths and weaknesses to the table. Solana excels in speed and scalability. Sui focuses on security and efficiency, while Rexys Finance carves out its niche in real-world asset tokenization. The key takeaway is that this isn't a zero-sum game. There's room for multiple platforms to succeed, and the real winners will be those who solve real-world problems and deliver tangible value to users.
Speaking of user experience, PancakeSwap just launched PancakeSwap X with zero fee and gasless swaps on Ethereum and Arbitrum. What do you make of this move, Nick?
It's a brilliant strategic play, Sarah. PancakeSwap is tackling a major barrier to mainstream DeFi adoption: complexity. Having to acquire native gas tokens like ETH just to make a simple trade is a huge turnoff for newcomers. By eliminating this friction point, PancakeSwap X could significantly broaden their user base.
Absolutely. It's like trying to pay for groceries with gold bullion, not exactly user-friendly. And it's not just about convenience. It levels the playing field with centralized exchanges, which have traditionally dominated the onboarding process.
Exactly. This move could be a game changer, especially if it sparks a trend within the DeFi space. We've seen Coinbase experiment with gas-free transactions in their new wallet, so clearly the industry recognizes the need for simplification.
On the flip side, we have the story about the fake Uniswap L2 site, Unichain, being promoted through Google Ads. It's alarming how easily users can fall prey to these scams, especially with the hype surrounding Layer 2 solutions.
It's a classic case of exploiting excitement and a lack of awareness, Sarah. These scammers are clever, leveraging Google Ads to appear legitimate and targeting users eager to get in on the next big thing. The Unichain incident highlights the importance of due diligence, even, or perhaps especially, in the fast-paced world of Web3.
It's like the Wild West out there, with all the potential rewards but also significant risks. Users need to be incredibly cautious, double-checking URLs, verifying information from official sources, and being wary of anything that seems too good to be true.
Precisely. Education is key. We need to empower users with the knowledge and tools to navigate this space safely. That includes understanding how to identify scams, protect their assets, and make informed decisions. Otherwise, these incidents will continue to erode trust and hinder wider adoption.
Speaking of user experience, let's talk about Off the Grid. It's generating a lot of buzz in the gaming community, and some are even calling it the catalyst for the next Web3 gaming bull run. Nick, what are your thoughts on this game and its potential impact?
I think it's definitely an interesting development, Sarah. For years, the crypto space has been waiting for that breakout game, something that could bridge the gap between traditional gamers and Web3. Off the Grid, with its focus on fun gameplay and familiar genre, seems to be ticking a lot of the right boxes.
It's fascinating that they're not even pushing the crypto aspects heavily. The CNET review didn't even mention the gun token or NFTs. It seems like they're prioritizing a solid gaming experience first and foremost.
Exactly. That's been the missing ingredient in so many previous Web3 games. They were too busy trying to onboard users to a new financial system that they forgot about the core element of any successful game. It has to be fun to play. Off the Grid seems to have learned from those past mistakes.
And the numbers certainly reflect that. Topping the charts on Epic Games, millions of downloads, huge viewership on Twitch, it's capturing attention in a way we haven't really seen before from a Web3 game.
It's definitely caught the industry's attention. If this success continues, and translates into a thriving in-game economy with the gun token, it could very well be the catalyst for a new wave of investment and innovation in Web3 gaming.
It's like they've cracked the code, showing that you can have a successful Web3 game without sacrificing gameplay or overwhelming users with the technical aspects.
And the timing is interesting too, with VCs reportedly becoming more bullish on Web3 gaming again. There's a sense that the space is maturing, moving beyond the hype and focusing on sustainable growth. Off-the-grid success could be perfectly timed to capitalize on this renewed interest.
Speaking of catching the wave, Nick, we've got two major Web3 events making headlines. WAGMI 2025 in Miami and Merge Madrid, which just wrapped up. What's your take on these gatherings, particularly in light of the current state of the crypto market?
Well, Sarah, it's interesting to see these large-scale events still drawing in crowds, even with the market being, shall we say, a bit unpredictable lately. It shows a certain level of resilience and continued belief in the long-term potential of Web3.
Absolutely. WAGMI partnering with Cointelegraph is a smart move, leveraging their reach to amplify the event's message and attract a global audience. And with big names like Miami's Mayor Suarez and Yat Siu from Animoca Brands on the speaker list, they're clearly aiming for mainstream appeal.
Right? And that's crucial for wider adoption. These events aren't just about preaching to the choir anymore. They need to showcase the tangible benefits and real-world applications of blockchain technology to a broader audience. And WAGMI seems to be doing just that, focusing on DeFi, blockchain infrastructure, and the overall crypto ecosystem.
And then you have Merge Madrid taking a slightly different approach, emphasizing the fusion of art, music, and technology. That AI DJ battle sounds particularly intriguing.
It does, doesn't it? And that's a smart way to engage a different demographic, those who might be drawn in by the creative aspects of Web3 rather than just the financial side. Plus, their focus on Spain's first national blockchain network highlights the growing interest in blockchain from governments and institutions.
Definitely. That announcement about the national blockchain network is huge. It shows that governments are recognizing the potential of this technology to streamline processes, increase transparency, and drive innovation across various sectors.
Exactly. And with Merge expanding to Buenos Aires next year, it'll be fascinating to see how they bridge the European and Latin American blockchain communities. That cross-pollination of ideas and expertise can only be a good thing for the industry as a whole.
Speaking of risk management, I've been following this interesting development with Nolis Protocol. They're introducing something called a DeFi lease, which aims to make crypto borrowing and lending a bit safer, especially for those who like to dabble in leverage.
Ah, yes, Nolis Protocol. It's an intriguing approach, bridging that gap between traditional finance and DeFi. Their DeFi lease model sounds like it could be a game changer, especially with that 150% financing based on collateral. That's a pretty generous offer compared to some other platforms out there.
Right? And what I find particularly interesting is their focus on risk management. That partial liquidation engine seems like a much-needed improvement over the typical full liquidation scenario that can wipe out borrowers during a volatile market swing.
Absolutely. Partial liquidations could be a real lifesaver for borrowers, allowing them to weather those market storms without losing everything. And for liquidity providers, it offers a bit more security, knowing that the platform is actively trying to mitigate their risks as well.
It's a win-win situation, potentially. And their fixed interest rate structure linked to liquidity pool utilization is an intriguing approach. It brings some predictability to the borrowing costs, which can be a major pain point in the DeFi space.
Definitely. Transparency and predictability are crucial for attracting more mainstream users to DeFi. However, borrowers still need to be mindful of factors like on-chain liquidity and potential slippage, especially when dealing with leveraged positions. Those costs can add up quickly if they're not careful.
Very true. It's not a completely risk-free system, but it does seem like Nolis is trying to address some of the key challenges that have plagued DeFi lending. It'll be interesting to see how this DeFi lease model plays out in the long run, and if it can truly live up to its promise of a safer and more efficient way to borrow and lend crypto. Well, Nick, it seems Ripple's not just riding the wave. They're making one with the launch of their stablecoin, RLUSD. What are your initial thoughts on this move?
It's a significant development, Sarah. Ripple's been a major player in the cross-border payment space, and now they're diving headfirst into the stablecoin arena. This could be a game changer.
And they're not just dipping their toes in. They've partnered with some heavy hitters like Bitstamp, Bitso, and MoonPay for global distribution. Plus, that advisory board with Sheila Bair and David Puth is quite impressive.
Absolutely. These partnerships and the advisory board bring instant credibility and regulatory confidence to RLUSD. It's clear Ripple's aiming for mainstream adoption with a focus on compliance and enterprise-grade solutions.
It's interesting to see them highlighting use cases beyond just payments, like tokenization of real-world assets. It seems they're positioning RLUSD as a foundational piece for a broader blockchain-based financial system.
Exactly. And the fact that they're launching on both the XRP ledger and Ethereum is strategic. It broadens their reach and caters to different ecosystems within the crypto space. It'll be fascinating to see how this plays out against other stablecoin giants like USDC and Tether.
Indeed. This is a developing story, and we'll be keeping a close eye on how RLUSD impacts the stablecoin landscape and Ripple's overall strategy. Thanks for breaking it down with us, Nick.